I'm going to go ahead and start the recording. I'm going to read the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition is what we are on tonight in our unity and service workshop. And the long form of tradition seven reads, again, I'm reading this from the AA group pamphlet in the back. And it says, the AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligations, whatever, is unwise. Then too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. And I read the long form because I know that I was going to read it off of the Traditions Illustrated, but I forget that it's not in there. So that's what I was scrambling for, my literature. But I want to say thank you to Carrie for being here this evening to talk with us about Tradition 7. So I'm going to give you Carrie B. from Bend, Oregon, New Horizons. Thank you, Carrie, for being here with us tonight.
Thanks, Dee. My name is Carrie, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group of beautiful Bend, Oregon, and my sobriety date is March 25th, 2010. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. Tradition 7, that's one of my favorites. It feels like I was just talking about Tradition 7 the other day because I was it at a different workshop? Is that why you're not? Yeah. Okay. So I couldn't find my notes for that one. So then I just got them for this one. And so hopefully this will be a better talk than the one I did the other day. I love Tradition 7 for one of the reasons why I love Tradition 7. And there are many, is because a lot of people will say, oh, that's just the money tradition, right? Like that's probably the least spiritual tradition. But I would like to challenge that because I think that the spiritual essence of Tradition 7, which I would go as far as to say would be a lot to do with responsibility, is immensely spiritual. And no, money, you know, money and spirituality mix probably only in the hat. That's the one place where money and spirituality mix. But I think that they mix very well when done with an informed group conscience and done with care and consideration. And so for me, I'm just going to give an example of, well, first I'll start out by challenging people. I almost, before I point this out, I almost am tempted to have us say the set-aside prayer because we get into a habit in Alcoholics Anonymous of just doing what's always been done, right? Of just, well, a buck in the basket at every meeting I go to. Like that's how it works. That's what I see other people doing. So that's what I'm going to do. But I guess my job here today as your Tradition 7 workshop leader is to challenge what we always do and what we hear in the meetings and what we see other people doing with what the literature actually says. And that's, it can be uncomfortable. Dee just gave me the go ahead for the set aside prayer. So let me do this. Let's close our eyes. And if you would like to, you can join me. God, please help me to set aside everything that I think I know about not only the steps, but these traditions and these 36 spiritual principles. And help me to have a new relationship and a new experience with the literature regarding these principles today. Amen. So with that, I'm going to read the long form of the seventh tradition, and I'm going to read it off of the seventh tradition pamphlet. This pamphlet is called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. It's pamphlet F3. So the first line of the long form is the AA groups themselves So this tradition, it's not speaking to AA as a whole, right? Like tradition three, the only requirement for AA membership, that speaks to AA as a whole, right? This tradition is speaking to the AA groups themselves, ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of AA members. Nope, that's not what it says. Get this. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. So I'm responsible with all of my other home group members to support my group. We don't rely on outsiders' contributions, not even other AA members, not even members of other groups. Now that's a challenge to wrap your head around. It's also could be extreme thinking. I'm going to try to fix that toward the end of my talk. But I think that that's a really, I think if we look at the words and we look at the word there, T-H-E-I-R, you know, there's a reason why it doesn't say it should be supported by other AA members. It says this should be supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. So for me, that tells me I'm responsible. I'm responsible for making sure the money I put in AA basket is going toward helping the alcoholic who still suffers outside of my group, right? And how am I going to do that? Well, if I put, let's say I have a home group that meets once a week, right? And I go to, I don't know, 5 meetings a week. And I'm putting $5 in the basket at every meeting. That's $5, $10, $15, $20, $25 a week. So that's like $100 a month in the AA basket. Okay. First of all, I should clarify and make sure that you know that whether you contribute 5 cents, $5, or $50, the spiritual essence of this tradition is the same straight across, because a dollar for me is going to be the exact same as $100 for someone else is going to be the exact same as $10 for someone else. So these are spiritual. This is a spiritual contribution. Doesn't matter the cost. Okay. It matters where we're contributing, not how much we're contributing, because please give what you can afford and not what you can't afford. So give it to your home group though, where you have a say in where that money goes. Because if I'm spending $100 a month on my AA seventh tradition contribution, and only 20 of that is going to my home group, and because I put in $5 in the basket of every group I go to, that means $80 of my $100 seventh tradition contribution could be going to expensive coffee creamer and birthday cakes and barbecues and never reaching the other entities of the local intergroup, GSO. Who knows? It could be going to a pop-up Zoom AA meeting that goes into somebody's pocket. I mean, you know, that's not responsible. This tradition asks us to be responsible. I put my seventh tradition into my home group basket, and I have a say at the business meeting what we do with that money. I know where we spend that money. I know where we distribute that money. But when I go to your home group and I put money in the basket, it's not my business where you put your money. I don't have a say in that. Say one thing about little story. I had this sponsee who, when someone asks me to sponsor them, and please know there's only one requirement for AA membership, right? A desire to stop drinking. That's it. You don't have to read the big book. You don't have to get a sponsor. You don't even have to attend meetings, right? You just have to have a desire to stop drinking. However, if you're going to call me your sponsor, there are other requirements. There's additional requirements. You're going to have to go to some meetings. You're going to have to read the big book. You're going to have to go through the steps. Like that's, you know, one of the requirements of calling me your sponsor. Well, one of the things on that list is the women that I sponsor, I require to have a home group that is connected to the heartbeat of AA, meaning you have a say in what goes on all levels of service. And so that requires you to belong to a group that has a general service representative. And this woman asked me to sponsor her, who had been a member of this group for, I'm guessing 15 years. She's been in AA longer, that she has more time, sobriety time than I have, which please means very little. She had asked me to sponsor her. And I said, okay, well, first, you know, we went over all the kind of the requirements. And I said, so do you have a home group? Where's your home group? And she tells me, and then I said, okay. And do they have a GSR? And she's like, no, we've never had a GSR. I said, okay, why don't you have a GSR? Well, I don't know. I've never thought about it. Okay, well, can you ask? So coincidentally, her business meeting, her home group's business meeting was just a couple of days later, coincidence. And she comes back to my house the next week with that information. She goes, I asked, we don't have a GSR because we can't afford one. We only meet once a week. She goes, you guys meet, like my home group meets 6 days a week. She says, you guys meet 6 days a week. You have plenty of money. My home group only meets one day a week. So, okay, well, let's uncover, discover, and discard. That's what we do. So I got out a piece of paper and set forth to take her group's inventory. So let's start with you. How much money do you contribute to your home group? She goes, oh, well, I put a buck in the basket at every meeting. Okay. You put a dollar in the basket at your own home group? And she said, yeah, because I go to a lot of meetings. And this lady is a meeting maker. I mean, I'm talking 1 to 2 meetings every day. So about 10 meetings a week. Okay, so 10 meetings a week, that's $40 a month. And you're giving $4 to your home group? What are the other ladies in your, because it's a women's meeting, of course. What are the other, you know, ladies putting in the basket? Oh, well, we all go to other meetings. So we all just put a, you know, buck in the basket. Okay, why don't you bring this up at your home group? And I showed her Tradition 7 and we did a little Tradition 7 study. And apparently it was not well received with her home group because this is new information, right? I mean, we have gotten so far off track with this tradition in the last 30 years that it's unbelievable. Like people don't even know the difference between their home group and the other meetings they attend. And so, you know, this was a shock to her home group, I guess. And so of course she was not met with enthusiasm. And so, the group did not vote that, but after a few months, now she did, she was awesome. She found a new home group because her options were, you know, get a GSR, stand for GSR, be a GSR in your group, find another group or find another sponsor. Like those are the options, right? And so she actually did find another home group. She still attended that meeting. And within 3 or 4 months, and I don't remember now, but I can only imagine once you hear something, once you see something red, you know, you can't unlearn that. You can't put that toothpaste back in the tube, right? So those ladies heard that. And now every meeting they're going to, they're having a harder time putting money in someone else's basket when they know that they can't even afford a GSR at their own home group. And wouldn't you know it, after 3 or 4 months, they started contributing more and they got a GSR. And years later, they still have a GSR and they are 100% fully self-supporting through the voluntary contributions of their own members. And it's only because of paying closer attention to the long form of these traditions and what the words really mean. Now, I appreciate, you know, that. And she actually ended up going back to that group about a year later, since now they have a GSR, which is awesome. But that's what the study of these traditions can do. Is they help us. They don't hurt us. You know, I was told early on, these traditions have never made anything in AA get done easier or quicker. That's not what they're for. But if we observe them, who's going to benefit from these traditions is the alcoholic not yet born, the alcoholic walking into the rooms 10 years down the line. Right? That's what these traditions are for. That's what it protects. So I'm going to mention the difference between donation and contribution, because everybody, anybody who knows me knows that I'm not going to talk about Tradition 7 without mentioning that. I don't know if anybody's noticed that AA literature uses the word contribution, not donation. Why is that? Like, what's the difference, right? Aren't they interchangeable? I mean, when you're at your, I don't know, business meeting, your treasurer gives a report and your treasurer will sometimes say, okay, we're going to donate this much money to intergroup. We're going to donate this much money to GSO. No, you're not. You're not going to donate because AA doesn't accept donations. Like straight across the board, AA does not accept donations. We accept contributions. A donation is from an outsider donating to something that they're not responsible for. Okay. So the difference between donation and contribution is we did used to use the word long time ago. We also used to be called, the General Service Office used to be called the Alcoholic Foundation. That was before the traditions were adopted. But once we adopted the seventh tradition, we realized words like donation and foundation imply a charitable cause. They imply a charitable organization. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, again, I'm going to use the responsibility word. We are responsible for covering our own way now, for paying our own way. We're self-supporting. We don't take donations. And the word donation, you know, let's just think about that in the form of ownership. Do you donate to your household bills? I don't know. I contribute to my household bills. Do you donate to the IRS or are you a contributing member of society? Now, I donate to Meals on Wheels. I donate to the Humane Society. It's the local animal shelter here because I don't have any responsibility toward those. My sobriety, Alcoholics Anonymous, is my responsibility. I don't get to pat myself on the back for my donation to AA. Oh, I'm going to help all those little alcoholics that need help by donating to them. No, it's my contribution, my spiritual contribution. So that's why our literature does not use words like foundation or donation, is because these are spiritual principles and we don't take outsiders' money. And in fact, the maximum amount that an individual can contribute in a year is $5,000. If you write a check to General Service Board for $5,001, that's considered a donation and you will be getting your check back. We don't take donations, not even from members. And anything above $5,000, we consider probably more than your fair share. That's probably not your contribution. That's probably you starting to want to donate to the poor alcoholics. And we don't do that. So with that, I think my time's about up. Thank you so much for letting me present on Tradition 7 today.
Thank you so much, Carrie. I feel like we're missing the clock in the rooms doing this. Okay. So next up, we have Concept 7 with Billy and Concept 7 reads. You can find that for those of you new. It is in the service manual, also in the Concepts Illustrated. You can find that. The conference recognizes that the charter and the bylaws of the General Service Board are legal instruments, that the trustees are thereby fully empowered to manage and conduct all of the world service affairs of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is further understood that the conference charter itself is not a legal document, that it relies instead upon the force of tradition and the power of the AA purse for its final effectiveness. And with that, I give you Billy N. From Florida here in Area 15. So thank you so much, Billy, for being with us tonight.
Thanks. I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. Good evening, everyone. Good to see everybody. We'll start out with something simple and basic that's always a question that's asked all the time. And then we'll go into maybe some of the more complex issues around Concept 7, because it is one of the shortest concepts yet might say the most, which in typical fashion, that seems to be how we are. But the first line says, the conference recognizes that the charter and the bylaws of the General Service Board are legal instruments. So if you have your current, almost past service manual in front of you, if you go to page S98, is the original conference charter. So I just want to reinforce to everyone, this is not the charter they're talking about in concept 7. All of our other concepts talk about the conference charter, which is the one on page S98, not being a legal document, not being legally binding. However, this one says the conference recognizes that the charter and the bylaws of the General Service Board are legal instruments. So what are we talking about? Well, inside the service manual, if you go to page Appendix E, page S114, there's the first half of that statement. There's the bylaws of the General Service Board. They're right there for everybody to see. That's the bylaws of the General Service Board, the current version. We have to get this word charter with a capital C kind of out of our mind in the year 2021. What if you were reading it in practical English, it would say, the conference recognizes that the charter and the certificate of incorporation of the General Service Board are legal instruments. That's what they were referring to when they used the term charter, when they wrote the concepts. If anyone would like a copy of the last updated certificate of incorporation that we have filed with the state of New York, send me an email. I'll be glad to send it to you. But that's what we're talking about. The trustees' chart bylaws and that certificate of incorporation are legal instruments. So there's so much confusion around the responsibilities of trustees. And there are words that we sometimes fight over in AA because AA language does not always match outside world language. And forget about if you try to compare AA language to legal language in the outside world. Then we have all kinds of places where the spiritual and the legal don't add up. And so what do I mean by that? I'm going to see if I can bring up a document. I'm going to see if it'll work. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. Let's see if I go through my meticulous filing system of AA, service, AAWS, New York State Attorney General. Oh, yeah. Here's a good one. Let's see if this comes up. And you can't see anything, right? It's too big, right? All right. Yeah, you can't see anything. That document will not download, but I'm going to read it to you. And again, if anybody would like what I'm referring to, I will gladly send it to you. But when you are a trustee, you are a director on at least one corporation, the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous, Inc. 21 trustees. Each is a member, a director of that corporation. Some trustees are directors of AA World Services and the AA Grapevine too. But my point is, just talking about the trustees, they have legal responsibilities besides their AA spiritual responsibilities. So much bad information is thrown around. It's hard to kind of make a list of the most bad information or the worst bad information. It's kind of like me calling the International Convention the largest gathering of unlicensed doctors in the world, right? We get a lot of bad information around about nonprofit corporations. Nonprofit does not mean losing money. I just want to stress that. Nonprofit does not mean losing money. What it does mean is that no individual person is allowed to benefit by any money made above expenses of that nonprofit. That's what a nonprofit is supposed to be held up to. I'm not saying there are nonprofits that don't go against that. I'm sure there are. But a nonprofit, you take your excess money over expense and you reinvest it back in the mission of the nonprofit. That's what makes you a nonprofit. And if you become a real nonprofit, which the IRS would give you a fancy code called 501c3, if you are a 501c3, you don't have to pay federal income tax. However, you have to be better at being a corporation. Some people don't realize that. The government just doesn't come to you and say, oh, Billy, thank God that organization you're part of is doing God's work. You don't have to pay taxes. Just do whatever you want. That is not what the government says. The government actually says, you're a nonprofit. We're going to give you permission to not pay taxes, but you're going to run your organization better than a for-profit. You're going to be more accountable to the members who support your nonprofit. You're going to be more transparent in your financials. So there's a level of responsibility for anybody that is a director on a nonprofit board. I'm speaking in the United States. Now, a lot of us will always say, AA is not a charity. Spiritually, AA is not a charity. We're not a charity in the usual form. We're self-supporting. We don't go outside and ring a bell outside stores during the holiday time and get people to put money in a bucket. People that have no connection to our mission, people whose life don't depend on our mission. In fact, we're self-supporting. We only take money, as Carrie just described, from members whose life depends on AA. But in the legal world, they lump us in with charities. That's just what they do. Every state has an attorney general's office, and every state, here's what, when you elect trustees in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll just give you a couple of documents that I've read. Here's document number one. Internal controls and financial accountability for nonprofit boards. New York State Office of the Attorney General, Charities Bureau. That document is 12 pages long about all the internal controls a nonprofit should have in the state of New York to make sure that money is being spent wisely. Here's another document. New York State Department of Law, Charities Bureau, right from the start, responsibilities of directors and officers for nonprofit corporations. That is 15 pages long. What I'm trying to get across is, yes, the trustees hold a spiritual position inside Alcoholics Anonymous, but at the same time, on a parallel track, they have an immense legal responsibility to operate that nonprofit corporation under the laws of the state of New York and under the laws of the United States of America. We are a federal nonprofit, yet we are regulated by the New York State Attorney General's Office because that's where we are incorporated. All three corporations are incorporated in New York. On the first page, page 27 without an S, there are a couple of things here, though, that match concept 6 and match concept 8 and match concept 1 about ultimate authority. We never, ever, ever say in AA that the trustees have ultimate authority. Only one group has ultimate authority inside Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is the General Service Conference, which is 70% made up by area delegates representing the AA groups. They have the ultimate authority. And on the first page of concept 7, which is page 27, in the second paragraph, it says, this means that the practical power of the conference will nearly always be superior to the legal power of the trustees. That's a very strong statement. And then it says, this superior power in the conference flows from the powerful traditional influence of the charter itself. It derives from the large majority of group chosen delegates in the conference. And then it goes in the last line to say, theoretically, the conference is an advisory body only. But practically speaking, it has all of the ultimate rights and powers that it ever may need. I mean, just listen to that line. Theoretically, the conference is an advisory body only. Why? Because the conference succeeded Bill and Bob as the permanent successors to the founders. And Bill and Bob were advisors to the early trustees. And when the groups replaced Bill and Bob, what does it say? But practically speaking, it has all of the ultimate rights and powers that it may ever need. And if Bill wasn't trying to drive the point home more, in the next paragraph, the last sentence on page 27, he says, the conference would find itself in complete control. Oh, well, I'll read the whole thing. When we reflect that our trustees have no salaried financial interest in their posts, we can be quite sure that a board would never think of legally contesting the clear and sustained will of the conference delegates and the AA areas they represent. If someday the chips were really down, there would be little chance of a stalemate. The conference would find itself in complete control of the situation. As the conscience of AA, the delegates would find themselves in ultimate authority over our General Service Board and also its corporate arms of world service. So I am a person that talks about 95% of the time that the delegates have very big latitude, the trustees, wide latitude as the legal directors of the corporation. And 95% of what they do is why we elect them to do it. But every once in a while, I hear somebody say that there are situations where the trustees overrule the conference. And I just want to let you know that that is not true. There may be a couple of situations where they could temporarily do things, and I'll get to them. However, the conference has complete ultimate authority, and I'll read that last line again. The delegates would find themselves in ultimate authority over the General Service Board and also its corporate arms of active world service. The next page, I just want to talk about quickly, talks about selection of our trustees and how the board should have a big part in this. And they should. One of the board's most important responsibilities is succession planning, is finding the right people to replace the people that are there now. Even in your probably private life, in your work life, everybody knows that if you're not planning for the future, you're planning for a disaster. That's what you're doing. And to not have a plan to replace people is always bad. And it is the trustees who are closest to the situation, who know what we need. Do we need maybe people with information technology experience in these days? Do we need people with experience with media technology and social media technology? Do we need people with experience with legal or business matters or accounting or financial management? We're a $15 million a year operation, and that doesn't even include our pension fund. $15 million to run AA, AA World Services at least, between the publishing and the services. So the board is divided, as you know, into 21 trustees. 10 of them are directly elected by the fellowship. The 8 regional trustees and the 2 trustees at large, the trustee for US, the trustee at large United States, and the trustee at large Canada. Those nominations come in from the 93 areas. That election takes place at the conference, usually on Wednesday afternoon. So 10 of the 21 come directly from the groups, directly from the 93 areas. The 7 Class A's, they're interviewed and selected by the board itself. And then the board sends those names to the conference for the conference to approve them. So now we have 10 plus 7 is 17. We have 4 more. The other type of Class B trustee, the general service trustee. That's the type of trustee that I was. The general service trustee is in a unique situation. I hate to call them half Class A and half Class B because there's no such thing as half an alcoholic in my book. So they have to be alcoholic. They have to have service experience. But they also have to have a professional skill that the board needs at that time. Because each corporate board has to have at least 4 trustees on it. 2 of those trustees will be regional trustees. They serve 2 out of their 4 years on either AA World Services or the AA Grapevine. But the General Service Board needs to know that 2 of the trustees on each board will have significant professional experience in one of the categories that I talked about: publishing, accounting, legal, financial. And those general service trustees are selected from people that already served as non-trustee directors. They've already done like an apprenticeship on the corporate board between 1 and 4 years. You have to have served 1 year. And then the general service board selects who they would like to be a general service trustee, and they send that name to the conference. And the conference has to approve it. Now, I'll try to end up quickly. Another piece of bad information that gets out there is that, let's just say the trustees put 21 names on a piece of paper. We call that the slate. That's the slate. And some people say that the conference only has the authority to either approve the slate or not approve it. They can't remove somebody from the slate. I'm still waiting for somebody to show me that page. I've been searching for a long time. I cannot find that page in the service manual. Instead, I find a page multiple times that tells me the conference is the ultimate authority. And if they were unhappy with 1 of the 21, well, then they would have the ability to pull that name off the slate. On page 29, I think there's a bad example given, but I'll read it anyway. It says, our trustees do certainly have absolute legal authority, but there is nothing in the charter that compels them to use their authority all of the time. They are quite at liberty to accept advice or even direction from anyone at all. They can simply refrain from using their absolute legal right to say no when it will be much wiser, all things considered, to say yes. Just as the conference should avoid the overuse of its traditional authority, so should the trustees avoid the overuse of their legal rights. That might be one of the important, most important sentences, I would say top 10 in all the concepts. And I want to read it again. Just as the conference should avoid the overuse of its traditional authority, so should the trustees avoid overuse of their legal right. In other words, the conference should stop micromanaging every single issue, but the trustees should avoid overusing their legal authority just because they don't want to ask the conference how they feel on something. And then it gives an example of the U.S. president. The president of the U.S., for example, has an absolute legal right to veto congressional legislation. Yet 99% of the time, he does not do it because A, he likes a piece of legislation, or B, he does not like the legislation, but believes a veto would nonetheless be impossible of success. Whether or not he will exercise his veto is determined by circumstances. It is just like that with AA's Board of Trustees. It is almost just like that. Because the president has the veto right as an individual. No trustee has the veto right of an individual, including the General Service Board Chair. 2 years ago, we had an incident at the General Service Board where the General Service Board Chair did institute a veto and declared something out of order. And at this year's General Service Conference, to her credit, the first thing she did was make amends for what she did the year before. Because the most important thing about this section is that the Board of Trustees as a group, voting in substantial unanimity, has veto authority, not an individual. And it gives three examples. If they think the conference acted too quickly, well, maybe they should hold up on doing something for a little while. If they think that something will exceed a budget approved by the conference, they could hold it up. And if they think a plan or something would put us in legal jeopardy. But in we just elected panel, or we are electing panel 72 delegates right now. That's never happened yet. So if you want to know how rare it would be for the trustees to declare that the conference acted out of order, in 71 General Service Conferences, that has not happened yet. So that's it, Dee. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Billy. Once again, always, thank you both for being here.
I'm not disappearing. I'm just getting more coffee.
No worries. So thank you guys so much. So this is the time where audience participation, you guys send in questions that you have. And I know that before the meeting started tonight, there was a question. To kick us off while we're stalling for questions to come in, Debbie had asked a question about what's the difference between conference-approved literature and not conference-approved, right, Debbie? Thumbs up? Yeah, so if you could, either one of you that care to talk about that, to try to make that
I'll
clear.
Leave it to Carrie.
Thank you, dear. Carrie?
Sure, I'll take that one. Thanks, Billy. I like this question. We actually have a GSO guide. It's not a guideline. It's a GSO published description of conference approved literature. And the very first section on that covers it really well. While Billy is answering his next question, I will pull that up and I'll put it in the chat. But basically what it says is conference approved literature. So the conference doesn't not approve of any literature, right? Like you can read whatever literature. I think outside literature is great. I think outside help is great. I think outside, you know, everything is great outside of the AA meetings. but I think that the question is the difference between AA literature and AA conference approved literature. So for example, the Grapevine, that's AA literature. We own the Grapevine, right? And when we study the Grapevine, which I don't, in an AA meeting, if your group decides that you would like to, you know, make the topic based on a Grapevine story or something, that's perfectly fine because it doesn't imply affiliation with an outside printing company like Hazelden or some treatment center, you know, whatever. It's still AA. We affiliate with ourselves, right? The difference between our AA literature that we publish, like service literature, like our committee workbooks, are great service literature. They just come from our committees at the general on the board. So there's a literature committee, and they can create these. But it doesn't go through the entire conference process. So what I love about conference approved literature is it goes through a lengthy and painstaking process where at every stage of development, people weigh in on it from all over the United States and Canada. So, and there's lots of votes taken on it, and it takes a long time to get something that our conference decides to publish. And that's what conference approved literature is. So things that need to be published more often, like our guidelines, you know, they change or they're updated every couple of years, stuff like that, like service material. There's no way we would have enough time to go through the whole conference approval process. But conference approved literature, as it says in the document that I mentioned, again, goes through a lengthy and painstaking process where at every stage of development, people weigh in on it. And what it says is it represents solid AA principles. Thanks.
Thank you, Carrie. Do you have anything to add, Billy?
Nope. Nothing to add.
Okay, perfect. Do you have a question that came in or anything to you? Because I don't have any yet.
I do. Okay. I have. Okay. Do you think the wording of concept 7 should be changed regarding the confusing first use of the word charter? If so, how would you suggest it? I'm just not sure it would be worth the time to argue over that, to change a concept. I don't think it needs to be changed. I just think we need to get the right information out to more people so that it's easily passed on that they're not talking about the conference charter. Let's see, I think I had another question here. Can you please explain what is meant by the conference traditional authority and how it can be overused? Well, sure, I mean, if the conference started, remember the words that I always stress in the concepts that are important, routine and ordinary, as it applies to what the trustee's job is, especially in concept 8. And so routine and ordinary, the conference doesn't need to be micromanaging routine and ordinary business decisions, like what day we file our taxes, like what color our checks should be. Like, should we have some nice symbol on our checks, or should we, the conference doesn't need to be involved in what kind of carpet we have at the general service office. They don't need to be involved in what the desks should look like. So any kind of overreaching, the conference is supposed to be a policy-making body. And so anytime, and I think, I personally am a person who thinks that there's too much on the conference agenda. And I think sometimes that's a little bit of a smokescreen. It makes the delegates feel busy. It makes them appear busy. But how many small routine things are they discussing when maybe we should be spending more time on important policy decisions? Thanks, Dee.
Wonderful. Thank you. And before I ask you, Carrie, if you have anything, I have one in the chat. Okay. And then I have one for both of you to kind of expand on the power of the purse also in a few minutes here and the importance of your contributions being tied to your group. So it says here in the chat, I can afford to put a dollar. No, wait. It says, do either Billy or Carrie have a suggestion for a group to follow in regard to studying and learning about the concepts? That's for both of you.
My answer is more for those who are just starting the concepts on concepts 101, because there's still, a lot of them are still way over my head. I think concept stuff for me, and this might not be for everybody, but the first couple of times, few times, I'll be honest, 5 or 6 times I was taken through the concepts. I just don't get it. Like, I don't even know what words mean over 3 syllables usually. So for me, firsthand experience, being at assemblies, watching the concepts in action is kind of what got me going, oh, that's what that concept means. Oh, I remember that in the service manual. And so I think having a working knowledge of the concepts for me came as a result of watching them in action. If you want to study the concepts, hands down, I only recommend one place to go. If your group wants to study the concepts as far as how they apply to like your group, if that's what you're asking, Concepts Checklist. It is not just a grapevine checklist like the Traditions Checklist is. That's just one person's opinion. That person who wrote the Traditions Checklist, one person, one member's opinion, a member who loves Alcoholics Anonymous very, 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 very much, and it shows, but a member who doesn't know one tradition from the next because they're all under the wrong traditions. So the Concepts Checklist is not like that at all. A Concepts Checklist was created by an entire group, went through an entire committee. They went through the entire, a whole bunch of people weighed in on it. Much better questions for understanding the concepts.
And Billy,
and I do
you
have some questions.
Okay, cool. Billy, you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. So I don't know if anybody here has experience with, you need to fix something. And in today's world, you go to YouTube, right? I mean, it's changed. I mean, you can have something break down with your washing machine or dryer or a motorcycle, and you can search in YouTube. And believe it or not, for everything that exists in the world, there's some lunatic who has created some kind of home video tutorial. It's amazing. And I think we would all agree that those YouTube tutorials are so much better than reading. Watching someone do it is a lot better. And what I mean by that is, and I want to echo what Kerry said about the concepts, is you can't, I always compare it to Joe and Charlie tapes and CDs. You can't just listen to a bunch of tapes about somebody going through the big book and say you've been through the big book. It's nice. It's good information. But it's not the same. And so with the concepts, it will take more time because the traditions you can see practiced every day in your AA life. But the concepts, you have to look a little harder. And really, until you're involved in service for a bunch of years, it's something that you just have to make a lot of mistakes at before you realize and are able to pass them on. I am a person who I hope, I keep asking for it for like 10 years now, but my hope is that someday on the AA website, when you're a new GSR and you get the new GSR kit, I'm sure a few of you have gotten a new GSR kit or a new DCM kit. I would love if there was some anonymity protected video of someone sitting in front of the AA.org website and explaining to those new GSRs exactly where you could find everything, how you could search it, maybe even bringing the service manual up on the screen and showing them some common places that are always referenced and very common for GSRs need to know. I think there's better ways we could transmit this information, but I'm confident that we will get there. But like Kerry, I agree that you have to do it. You can't just become an expert at it. You have to do it. Thanks. D, I had another question here. Can you give an example of why someone might be removed from the slate? That would be up to the Conference Committee on Trustees. They did it 2 years ago. There was a name on the slate to become an AAWS director. That name was removed. That's actually the action that the chair called out of order. And as a result, the slate had to be passed in a floor action with missing one of the names of an AAWS director, not a trustee. That person was put on the slate this year and is now an AAWS director, by the way. It was removed because there was some debate about whether we had inadvertently disqualified other people from applying because we put the wrong date in a notice. We said any past delegates who were not passed as of this certain date were not eligible, but we used the wrong date. And so a lot of people who thought they would be eligible didn't apply. And the conference committee felt that it would be improper to pick somebody if a lot of other people weren't given the chance to apply. There could be a numerous other reasons why the Conference Committee on Trustees or the full conference itself might not approve somebody. It happens very, very rarely. I don't know if I have any more questions, Dee.
I have a ton. Okay. I'll go for this one. I think this one actually says, always good to see you, my dear. Personal question, which I'm assuming you just wanted me to message you back, but it's a really good question. So I'm going to answer it out loud. If a group that isn't your home group is having an event and you attend the event, don't you contribute monetarily to the event or the basket when you're there? I love this question. Yes, I didn't get to the end. I always get off track because I start talking. Thank you for asking this question. Absolutely. Like my seventh tradition contribution to seventh tradition means that's where my money is going in contributing to the alcoholic not yet born, contributing to my local intergroup, contributing to my local district, contributing to my area. If I want to be self-supporting, I don't want to contribute my contribution to your group. But if your group is having, like, let's say WFS group is the oldest group here in Central Oregon, and they have like this anniversary party every year to celebrate their group's anniversary. Well, they go all out and they buy food and cake and everything. When I'm there, I will put a buck or even two in the basket, depending on, you know, if I have more than a cup of coffee and a piece of cake, because I'm paying my own way and I'm paying for what I'm eating, right? And what I'm using of theirs. What I'm not paying for is my money. I'm not expecting my money to get to those entities that they are needing to be getting to. I do that through my home group because I have a say in where that money goes. So do I want to be fully self-supporting when I go somewhere and pay my own way? Absolutely. Like when you come to my house for dinner, right? If you want to help out a little bit and bring a loaf of bread, I'm going to accept that, right? What I'm not going to do, and that's we're going to eat that night. That's not going to go toward my bills. It's not going to go, you know, for next week's dinner. What I'm not going to do is as you're leaving, get out a pad of paper and say, okay, your total for the your part of the water bill is this much, for the electricity tonight is this much, and charge you because you aren't responsible for my bills. But if you want to contribute something to dinner, feel free. So hopefully that makes sense. Also, like if I go to the Central Oregon Intergroup potluck here, that's not my home group, but my home group is part of the intergroup. So I am part of the intergroup. So I do contribute to the intergroup potluck. So hopefully that made sense. And then I have a couple others too. Question, an annual contribution of an AA member is $5,000. I think you mean a cap. That's the annual maximum, just to correct the question a little bit. When leaving a contribution in a will, am I right? In the limit being 10,000. I read in the AA group pamphlet on page 22, but there are any conditions on this or am I wrong? But also in the 12 Traditions Illustrated, it only states $5,000 in a will. I'm confused. Okay, so first of all, if you're reading in the 12 Traditions Illustrated, the $5,000 in a will for bequests, that's just an old pamphlet. It's updated by now. So you just are reading out of an old one. As far as the $10,000 go, yes, that is the current cap that we can leave in a bequest. And yes, there are conditions, believe it or not. And a lot of attorneys are aware that of our conditions. And if you go to an attorney and ask, I want to leave, you know, stuff to AA or whatever, and you call member services, the member services department will send you something saying, first of all, you want to leave this as a member in good standing. That means that you're a contributing member to a home group. If you're just a family member or, you know, whatever, they're not gonna, they're not gonna accept it. They don't accept donations. So one last contribution left in your will, they allow $10,000, twice the amount of a annual. But you gotta make sure to put it in there that you are a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything over $10,000, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place that will spend more money on attorney fees, getting money back to your family, than it is even left in the will. Like somebody left, well, I don't know, Billy would be able to explain this, but it's been about 6 or 7 years since this happened, but like somebody left $200,000 to AA in a will one time or something, or maybe a house or something, and AA spent a whole bunch of money trying to not take that money. So that's how serious our spiritual principles are. We don't take handouts.
Here's what I want to chime in on that question. And I hope if everybody don't even listen to a thing I said on Concept 7 tonight. The most important thing I'm going to say is on these contribution maximums. It is the craziest thing we spend time on year in and year out at the conference. I just want to let you all know, less than 20 people last year gave $5,000, okay? Less than 20. We spend more time, we keep lifting this limit from 3 to 5 to 10, thinking like what? Rich people should support AA? It's never going to happen. And because of that, we're into these gimmicks of $7.14 or whatever else. It's not the newcomer who's not paying their way. And in honor and respect of Tradition 7, we don't want rich people controlling AA.
That's right.
We refuse to talk about the middle and how people need to honor their obligation more. We are never going to fix our budget problems by raising the maximum contribution.
And so that brings me to the question that I had regarding tying both of you together with the contribution to your home group. And when we talk about Concept 7 and the power of the purse, why that's so important, the contribution and your group number being tied to your contribution. Do either of you want to elaborate a little more on that for those in the audience?
Well, you know, I do. That's my favorite topic, but I do have a couple questions that came before. Do you want me to go for that?
Go ahead. No, you're fine. You guys do.
Because I do see that one. In the AA group pamphlet on page 35, there's a chart. Can you please explain the chart and the role that AA group plays, if any, in where their contributions go? So I'm going to actually direct your attention to a better chart even. In that pamphlet, Money and Spirituality Mix, and David, I'm not ignoring your question, and you and I can talk about that also later, but I think that it gives a better chart and a better illustration on page 13 of the where Money and Spirituality Mix. There's three charts. I don't know, I'm gonna make myself big right now because I don't have this up to screen share. So I'm just gonna show you. Let's see. Thank you, Dee. Okay, so there's three little samples here. And this is very important, that these samples that say like 10% could go to district, 10% could go to area committee, 30 GSO, 50 intergroup. And then there's another sample down here. And then there's a blank sample that you can fill out yourself up here. These are, the key word is sample. These are not suggestions. And because this is so important that these are not suggestions, they're samples. This year's General Service Conference just decided that from this point on, when this pamphlet is published, there's going to be a watermark right over them saying sample, because for some reason, new GSRs or new treasurers look at this and they go, oh, we're supposed to give 10% to district, 10% to area. You can remove the spotlight, D. 10% to GSO, blah, blah, blah. But that's not the case at all. Every group needs to decide where they need to contribute. And in order for a group to decide that, they need to be listening to their intergroup representative's treasury report. They need to be listening to their GSR's district treasury report, to their GSR's area treasury report. Because, for example, when we went into the pandemic, my home group, we like to stay informed, and a pie chart that doesn't change ever, a stagnant pie chart, means that you have a group of apathetic members. And so if your pie chart is constantly changing with the needs of your different entities, then you have a healthy, pie chart. And so what we did in my home group is we took a vote when we went into the pandemic that Oregon area and District 5, we don't have an office. We don't pay employees. We don't pay phone bills. So we're going to stop contributing to them, and we're going to start giving all of our money to GSO, to the General Service Office, and to our local intergroup, because we still have to pay employees. We still have to pay phone bills. We still have to pay for the internet bills. We still have to pay for rent and electricity and all of this stuff. And today, as a result, and I wish that more groups did that, because today, as a result, Oregon Area 58 has more money than we've ever had in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the history of Oregon Area 58, and District 5, my district, has more money than we've ever had in the history of District 5, because groups are stagnant, and they just continue sending money to the same entities that they've always continued sending money to, where right now, I mean, intergroups everywhere and GSO, they're still paying out. So thanks. Dee, did you want me to touch on the...
I have a question, by the way. I'm just going to read my question.
Go ahead.
I'm interested in the comment on succession planning, which I think is a process and strategy for replacement planning or passing on leadership. Is that maybe a little like job for the boys? I've seen this happening in AA. So I think what that means is the reference of job for the boys is just reference for boys or girls that you're best friends with or buddies with, and you get jobs for them. Yes, that should not happen on the AA board ever. I believe I have been the chair of the nominating committee at the General Service Board. I've been on the nominating committee 3 times. I've been on the AWS nominating committee. There is such a diverse geographic makeup of the 21 trustees and the 6 non-trustee directors at GSO that it would be very hard to do this, to just put your buddy in. My experience has been that it is based on what we need at the time and how people do in interviews. And, am I going to say that politics never enters AA service? Of course not. And I don't mean politics outside politics. I mean just internal shenanigans. But for the most part, 98-99% of the time, I always felt like it's impossible to get your buddy in, because you don't have enough buddies that are on the board. They're all from all over the place. And but if the question was, should there be a process in place to make sure that doesn't happen? Absolutely. The last thing we need in Alcoholics Anonymous is nepotism, is just putting friends of friends on boards. That will only weaken us and destroy us.
So as far as concept seven goes, did you want me to answer that question now or no?
Yeah, if you guys could just wrap us up with that, right? Because some people on here might not understand the importance of that.
Okay. As far as concept seven goes, every time we used to study the concepts before 2017, I used to say, well, this is the concept where Bill was paranoid. Obviously, we will never need the power of the purse. Like, why would we ever elect a trustee who would go against like the traditions or the concepts? Like, it's ridiculous. We don't even need to talk about this concept, blah, 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 blah. Right. Meanwhile, I am the biggest general service cheerleader. I mean, I would never even dream, not even in a nightmare, about voting to discontinue contributions to the board, to GSO, to GSB. And then July of 2017 happened. And I got a call that we just went into the board. Just went into public controversy over money, power, prestige, and pop over money, property, and prestige. And we took out a lawsuit to sue for the original manuscript. And I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't even believe it. And once I confirmed that was true, not by my delegate, because of course my delegates no delegates knew about it. This happened without the fellowship knowing. Most of the fellowship found out about it in magazine articles. I discontinued my personal, not in my home group, my personal recurring contribution the day after that. And I cried the whole time that I was doing it. And then at my home group, I had to present that information. Nobody believed it because, of course, our DCM didn't know about it. Our delegate didn't know about it. The fellowship doesn't know about it. But I showed them proof that it was actually going on. And by the time 4 months later happened, and it took us 4 months to all study the Tradition 7 and Concept 7 and the power of the purse and all of that, that we finally came to a decision. And for the first time in my life, I actually put my hand up in favor of discontinuing temporarily contributions to GSO until we dropped the lawsuit. And it was hard, it was painstaking, but I understand why we have power of the purse today. And without that, the groups wouldn't be on the top of the triangle. And Billy talks about how AA was left to the groups, not the individuals, the groups. And so if you are contributing to general service through your personal account, you're offered a spot to fill in your home group's general service number. Take that opportunity. Don't leave that blank, because the groups need to stay on the top of the triangle. That's how we stay in control of that power of the purse, just in case something ever like that happens ever again. Which I hope it doesn't, but it might, you know, who knows? So as long as the groups are at the top of the triangle and GSO isn't being covered by individual contributions, because I'm too lazy to call my treasurer or my GSR and get my general service number when I make my contribution, then the groups will remain at the top of the triangle. And then I have one more question, Dee. I don't know if
you can. While we're on that topic,
yes, Billy.
My last question. Mm-hmm. Because someone wrote to me, Billy, at my area assembly recently, they decided they would not be sending any more money on to GSO this year. I didn't like that, but it was the conscience of the area. If the conference is an advisory body and the board has financial power, could they request funds if AA ended up in financial difficulty? So the answer to that question is the General Service Board can always say it needs funds, but it has no legal connection between areas. There's no contractual privity or ownership privity between the board and groups. So they couldn't say, like in other organizations, the board can say, like if you're in a homeowners association and your condos need a new roof, the board can make an assessment and say, you know what, you're paying $500 extra this year. Yeah, the General Service Board, the trustees can't do that. But what I would tell this person who asked that question is go back to your assembly and talk to your delegate. And you wrote in there that you were new. Find out why they decided to not send money to GSO anymore. And find out the reason for it. It could be a million reasons. It could be that they think they don't have the money to give anymore. It could be that they're upset with a recent decision. It could be a million things, but find out why. Don't ever be afraid to ask questions. Don't ever just take the answer, well, this is what we did, because that's a pretty strong decision that the assembly made. Find out why, especially for the most important reason, that you can't just bring back to your group and say the area decided to not send money on to GSO anymore without being able to tell your group why the area decided to do that, so that your group can, you know, digest that information and decide maybe the area is not acting right. Maybe you need to go back to the area and say, I'd like to make a motion that we start giving money again, but you can't do that without the information.
Awesome. Thanks, Billy. And did you want to add anything to what Carrie was saying, or you good on that? Okay. All right. So Carrie, you got one more and then we're going to close. If we don't have any more here, I think we're good.
Okay. Here's an official question. If someone doesn't rotate out of a position because there's no one to take my place, quote unquote, does that also mean that the group isn't fully self-supporting? So the spirit of rotation is in the AA group pamphlet on page 28, and the paragraph that kind of speaks to rotation says, to step out of an AA office you love can be hard. If you have been doing a good job, if you honestly don't see anyone else around willing, qualified, or with time to do it, and if your friends agree, it's especially tough, but it can be a real step forward in growth, a step into humility that is, for some people, the spiritual essence of anonymity. Billy always says you can't fill a filled position, right? So leave your keys on the counter and walk out. And I understand that's not the question. I understand that the question is in reference to tradition 7, being that the each group should be fully self-supporting through the voluntary contributions of their own members, both monetarily as well as physically, with service commitments, then I would say, and this is my opinion because it's not in the literature, but I would say as long as it's someone, a bleeding deacon in your own home group that wants to continue doing that position over and over again, it's still that the group is being self-supporting. If you go outside of your group and say, hey, we don't have anybody to be our GSR or our treasurer, can we get a non-home group member to do it? Then your group is not being self-supporting.
Thank you. You both are done on your questions. Did you get any more, Billy? Or are we good?
All done.
Okay. Thank you both so much. And thank you for staying after. So I want to say one announcement before you guys hang up, because I know the numbers are going to start dropping here. So starting the last week here is going to be November 7th. The last Tuesday is November 7th. We are going to the following Wednesday, that following week, on the December 15th, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, we're going to pick up with the new service manual with Billy. So for those of you interested, a lot of you have been asking.
I think you said November 7th, and then we start December 15th. You mean December 7th, right?
Yes, December 7th. Thank you so much. I apologize. I'm looking at the November calendar. Yep. Thank you. Thank you. So the last night for this one, for this 13-week workshop is December. I almost did it again. December 7th. And then the following week, Wednesday, we'll be picking up at 8 p.m. Eastern. So that way it's a 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern for all you guys for this new service manual. So that'll be great. So if you're interested, come on back for that. So again, thank you so much. So we're going to close with the responsibility statement. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Thank you both for always being here. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee. Thank you, everybody. It was nice
to see you. Thank you, my dear.
Thank you, Dee.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, calls, guys.
Yeah, night.
Thanks.
Hi, guys. Did that help, Debbie?
Hey,
Dee,
I have a quick question for you, Dee. Hey, I know in the last meeting, I did not save the chat, and you said something about the link for the new service manual in a couple of days. Is that in this chat too?
Yep.
Okay.
It can be, but it'll be an empty one. Get ready. Here it is. It's going to be this link that I've created that I put in right now. There's no flyer in it, and there's no recordings in it, but there will be. Okay. There will be a link and a flyer and all that good stuff. Yeah. But you'll get it. You know, send it out. Yeah.
Great.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Always you're welcome, honey.
To hear all of this, all of this service that's almost all above my head, but that's okay. Love you, too.
Thank you for your service. Love you, dear.
Thanks again for all you do, Dave.
Oh, thank you, dear. Good night, my dear. Betsy, good night. Good to see you. Thank you, honey. Hi, Steve. Betsy, you behaving? Oh, she's already gone. Oh, no, there she is. Hey, honey.
Yeah, I'm out here in the desert. I'm out here trying to find a treatment center in the desert. Love you guys. Thank you so much.
Ooh, bye, dear. Okay. Good night, Steve. How are you? Did we send you an unmute? I think I sent you an unmute.
Good. Thank you, Dee.
Perfect. You're welcome. Good night. Did you get everything you needed for the resources and the recording links and all that?
I did, except the end date for the recurring service manual study.
We're not sure yet. Usually, usually we do it at like a 13-week study, you know, because usually we'll do an introduction the first week. And then Billy, I'll have based on the last service manual, it just worked out that way with the chapters. We did it 13 week, you know, with the first week being an introduction. However, depending on how the layout is with this one, we'll know in the next day or so, because on the 4th, I believe the electronic version's out. Then I'll have what I use to make a flyer, and I'll talk with Billy about it a little bit further in the next 2 days.
You know, Dee, week after week after week, I see excellent facilitation that you give to us. So thank you very much for opening this and running it. It's just all the time.
It's selfish of me. Thank
it's
you
like
so
our
much.
Higher power.
That.
It's like our higher power, utterly yes. reliable.
Let me tell you, if it wasn't for this, then during the pandemic, you never know, like in all seriousness, I mean, in a lonely spot sometimes in service, I might've been the one that went back out. Who knows? Like, even though we say that sometimes thinking that that would never happen, the reality is I've been disgruntled in those ways before in right in my own, you know? So this is beautiful that we can come together. So thank you for saying that. Like a prize fighter, we kind of go back in the ring after we come into the corner and get the blood wiped off and the sweat and pat you on the butt and get back in there. Anyway, thank you, my dear.
See you soon.
Good night.
Thank you.
You're